Hello and welcome back to Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, episode 82. Hey Mo, how's it going, buddy?
Hey ho, buddy. So fine, so good. How are you?
I'm all right. I love that I find the time to be in the office these days. You know, it's like 1 or 2 days a week. Like, well, this is the first time it's been 2 days in a week, so I'm kind of thankful for that. I basically had the option of either doing one full day, like one, you know, longish day, or two half-ish days. And I think I kind of like that it's two half-ish days because I get to stay fresh when I'm here, and it's not like I don't feel that I have to rush and cram everything into one sitting. So I'm very thankful for that. How are you doing?
Yeah, I've been good. I'm on the last days of my very long vacation. Like, I was off.
I was going to ask.
All yeah. September. Wake me up when September ends. And that
wake me up.
Today, when this episode comes out. That's my
right.
last day.
Dang, dude, that's crazy. That's a long break.
That's a long break, yeah. And I'm trying to enjoy it the best I can. And so far that worked out pretty good.
I was actually wrong about your vacation because my mom, you know, she's staying with us right now. And I told her that we came back together a couple of weeks ago for the 80th episode. I was like, yeah, I think we're going to try and bring the show back every week now. And she goes, oh, so is Mo back from his vacation? And I thought she meant, you know, when you traveled out of the country. I just understood it as like, I was like, oh, yeah, he's been back. He's been back. Of course he's back. But then, you know, I guess she meant that you had mentioned being off for the month. So
no. So,
my mistake, whatever. But dude, I wrote you yesterday because we almost recorded yesterday. You were at a birthday party.
Yes, sir.
How was that, man?
It's weird. These kind of events come back. Like, it was like not a crazy party. It was like a get together of like 10 friends or whatever, all vaccinated. Yeah. But it was cool. Like, This friend of mine, normally his birthday always like falls into the same window as the Oktoberfest, and so he always celebrates.
Oh, that's awesome!
Celebrates there. I cannot say that I miss that too much, but no.
You don't miss celebrating it, Wiesn, or what?
I don't miss Oktoberfest too much, actually, I realized. Like, but that's another thing. But yeah. So the idea was to like do a kind of similar thing in terms of he had this classic Bavarian like furniture that you have in a beer garden or whatever, and have a Weisswurst Frühstück and stuff like that. And it was cool. The only issue was that it was a Tuesday, and I'm on my last week of vacation, like I mentioned, but most of my other friends still have to work. And the friend who had his birthday also had a free day. So we were like meeting at noon.
Nice.
And the rest would come after their work. So like between 6 and 8.
So by the time they met you, you were just plastered.
That's the thing. It can be mean if you start drinking way earlier than the rest of the party.
So wait, so you were being courteous, like you were there at noon, but you didn't drink that much until 6?
That didn't work out.
I was gonna say, like, how did you hold that off? I would never have been able to do that.
No, but it was cool, and it's like I'm kind of enjoying it that like things like these work out, and it seems like it's not that you have to worry that much anymore when you do these kinds of events. And we're talking about like meeting like probably 10 people most of the time outdoors.
Yeah.
But at least, and obviously I would love to have concerts back, and also probably also at some point bigger parties or events, whatever.
Sure.
But for me it's like at least that's a step, so like
that's
at least I don't have to worry, and I can meet a few people, and we can have a few beers and have a good night.
Well, dude, next year I'm scheduled to go to not only three different weddings, but a trip back to the States. So for me, I'm really curious how these things will work out. Like, three different weddings, one in Germany, one in Italy, one in Greece, which Ooh. Is like, dude, hold my beer while I sweat over the travel costs. And then, a trip to the States as well. We're supposed to try and manage all of that. And it's not like the weddings are far apart. It's not like there's one in February, one in July, one in December. It's like, of course, all around late spring, summer pushed together. So, and I'm curious too, because, all of the couples, there's three different couples and they're all technically married now. Like,
but let me ask you one question. Like, do they live in these respective countries, or do you all travel there together?
Traveling together.
Okay. So yeah. It's friends from Greece and it's friends from Italy.
No, that's the one thing too. I never really understood. I mean, I guess like in the movies you think about like, oh, a destination wedding. But for me, I never really thought about
dude, like, you came living all here. Over from the States to marry in Germany.
<That's>, yeah, but I live here now. You know, they don't live in Italy. I thought that was kind of, I mean, it's a bold move, I think. It's cool. It's cool that they want to do that. But I also think it's kind of a bold move. Because I'm also curious if it'll work out. Like, all three couples are officially married, like, with a Standesamt. Mm-hmm. And even one of the couples already had a kind of wedding. Like, it was last year. There was, you know, precautions taken. It was like 25 people. Not a huge event, but still it was like a ceremony and performances and speeches and presentations and dancing and music and food and alcohol. So for me, it was kind of like, oh, that was a nice, like, little thing. But still, there's another one being scheduled for next year that's supposed to be like the huge 150 people, like, extravaganza, which is like...
So they get like 150 people all traveling together to Italy or Greece.
No, this is the one that's... Sorry, I should have specified. This, the one I'm talking about now, is the one that will be here in Germany.
Okay.
But the ones... with Italy and Greece, that's difficult. And I understand that that's difficult because both couples are international couples. Like, mm-hmm. one couple, you know them, Ben and Katie. They are one British, one American, and they're marrying in Greece. And that's actually where they are still right now. I think they had a small honeymoon. And the other couple is Australian and German, and they're marrying in Italy. And I think these couples are doing an international wedding because they couldn't decide on whose home country to do it in.
It's like when like at the end of a war and the allies and the enemy meet at neutral ground.
It's like, yeah, yeah, it's like they're going to Switzerland to make a deal. Yeah, exactly. I guess that's the best way to look at it. I didn't, until I just said it out loud, I didn't think like maybe it is the fairest thing for their, because I think it's maybe hard for their families to decide, like, well, why don't you come to England? Why don't you come to Australia or whatever?
What could have been a compromise for you and your wife? Like, what's the middle? Iceland?
Let's see. Germany and America. Maybe the UK is like somewhere in the middle, or maybe New York.
Maybe New York. Yeah. But since this is an artsy-fartsy immigrant topic, was that ever a thing you had debates about? Like where to get married? Or do you want to talk about this at all? I'm not sure, but...
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, no, it was never really a debate. It was always kind of like... I don't know if we... Maybe years ago we talked about potentially doing something back in the States. But if we did, it didn't last long. In my recollection, it was always understood that we would do it here. I think it... Because... You know, sort of traditionally, the father of the bride finances things. And in our case, that made the most sense anyway, given their financial situation. So I think it was never really discussed too much that we wouldn't do it anywhere else. But I think it always made sense that we do it here, because I didn't have that many people that needed to fly over. Like, you know, she has... I mean, out of the 150 people or something, I would say 85% of them live in either that town or Munich or close by. enough. Like furthest away would be Berlin, maybe a couple of people. And the rest, like, you know, my family, a handful of friends flew from New Orleans. That was the biggest reach. But a lot of them, you know, looped in their own Euro trips anyway. They came for the wedding, but then they would go to Portugal and Spain and Austria and whatever.
Which makes absolute sense. And it's a nice idea.
Yeah. And it was in June. So like a summer trip, for an American traveling in Europe, it's like just like in the movies, you know, that's what they really want to do. So it made sense.
Yeah. But I see that this might be a topic to debate about probably as an international couple, because I guess everybody wants to have their family, their loved ones at their wedding.
And you probably have a lot of...
It makes sense to go for a completely other country. And you got to say, like you said, like movie scenario, like you imagine the George Clooney at an Italian lago kind of scenario.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Now that I talk about it, like in this much detail, I think I actually have more sympathy for that choice than I did when I first thought about it. I think I first thought about it as like, oh man, you're making all your friends travel to a different country. But in the end, it's probably really hard for them to say like, okay, all of your family come to this country or all of your family go to that country. Let's just pick a neutral place that's beautiful. We can all travel. So it's all equal. Mm. So, I mean, and I'm sure with their families, I know particularly with one of the couples that the family situation is way more complicated than it was with ours.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think wherever we would have decided to get married, my family would have been like, yeah, sure. Cool. You know? And I know that the other couples, it isn't that easy.
Like Madagascar sounds awesome, son.
Let's do it, man. Always wanted to ride an elephant. I think it probably would have been, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's restrictions. Like if we'd said like, we want to get married in Zanzibar, I mean, I probably would have scared my family a little bit because they think anything too extreme like that is a little scary, understandably. But yeah, no, I can understand that. I just thought about something I wanted to ask you before I forgot. You mentioned that your friend's birthday usually lies in Wiesn. And since this is the second year in Munich that we don't have Wiesn, what is this thing called? Because here in Munich, I noticed it, I guess, last week or the first weekend that Wiesn would have started. I went for a walk and I noticed a lot of people in Tracht, in Lederhosen and Dirndl, in this traditional clothing from Bavaria. And they were all over Munich and you had some people playing like these live little brass bands in these cafes and stuff. So is this like a people's way of celebrating it anyway?
Kind of, yeah.
Is there a name for it, or is that just an unspoken thing that people do?
Like, I'm not sure whether this is the official name for it, but I've heard it a lot and heard it a lot of like restaurants, around bars, cafes, would participate in this, and it's called Wirtshauswiesen.
Wirtshauswiesen?
Yeah, so kind of like bringing some details of the Wiesn like reality to like restaurants, etc. Like they have a special menu for that 2 weeks and that special Oktoberfest beer and probably the kind of music you would imagine at Oktoberfest, etc. and decoration and so on and so forth.
Okay, have you ever? But you don't celebrate that, or do you?
No.
Do you do that? No.
No, I am like I must say like I'm not the biggest fan of it. Why is that?
Because you come from such and this is with all the respect in the world, you come from a very traditional like a smaller town that's really into tradition, that's really into Tracht, that's really into beer. So it surprises me to hear that you don't really enjoy that. So is it because you grew up around it so much that you're just kind of like, I'm over it, or?
I guess that I had at a certain age as a teenager, probably for 2 or 3 years, that kind of mindset. But it's not like that. And I still, like when I come back to Oberstdorf, and sadly, due to Corona, I couldn't attend these events. Like, you know, Fischheit, you've been there.
Which one is that?
Like when the kettle come down from the...
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I love going to these kind of traditional events, etc. But the like the Oktoberfest, given the fact that it's the biggest traditional party in the world with millions of people coming in for Munich each and every year.
It's just not as special to you anymore.
No, it's right? Like it's like it kind of annoys me that a certain kind of vibe that goes through the city and the certain kind of how this, like many of these traditions, you know, from Bavaria, southern Germany or the Alps or whatever, like are thrown together and sold as a kind of plastic fake form of tradition. And it's mostly about making lots and lots and lots of money because it is such a huge event. Like there's a whole you could call it industry behind it.
There is absolutely an industry behind it. Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing. And also, I don't know, I got a lot of issues. Like every time I've been there, I was so annoyed, especially by men who, I don't know how to put this. Probably like I was annoyed by men that thought it doesn't matter how they behave anymore as soon as they wear a lederhosen and drink like a few beers there.
Yeah.
Like
they get just so reckless and
ask women about their Oktoberfest experiences. There are a lot of ugly stories and I know, and that's the thing.
That's
like,
true. Yeah.
Like the kind of, as you call it, beer cell, like beer tent atmosphere kind of parties that I enjoy are rather the smaller ones. I know from the area where I grew up. Where you have a whole another vibe and it's not the same music, it's not that much Schlager music, etc. It's not like people being on the tables all of the time and everybody's
it's not forcing this like extremely rambunctious behavior. It's more about respectfully, casually enjoying it. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And so many other things, and like it's super expensive and
it's super expensive, yeah.
Like, I still find it kind of, or I think it's kind of perverted that you know there's this one hill at Theresienwiese, and it's as far as I know internationally known as kind of the vomit hill.
Ooh, yeah, okay. I didn't even know that actually.
Like, yeah, I've seen international kind of in quotation marks news reports about that specific hill at the Theresienwiese where people go to or to have sex or whatever, and it's kind of gross. Like Oktoberfest.
Let's go have sex on Vomit Hill.
What if we made, imagine this meme, what if we made out on Vomit Hill?
Oh, come on, baby. It's there's a dry spot in the corner.
Dude, whatever. Like it does a lot to the people, and I don't cope with everything it does to this city and the people. Plus, what I always had pre-COVID, like each year, and it's known in Munich as the Wiesenerkältung, like the flu.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Every year since I live in this city, no matter if I actually went to Oktoberfest or not, and probably just have been, I don't know, on the subway through the city with people from the Oktoberfest in there. Every year since I live here, around that time, or like the week after Oktoberfest's over, I get sick. I get a kind of flu.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. I see that happen to a lot of people. And I think you actually make some really interesting points about why, like, it was way more nuanced about why you don't like it than I initially thought. And I respect that because it's all really good points. I also don't like the Wiesenerkältung. I also get like sniffly and sore throat and stuff around that time. There's all these millions of people, this influx of people, and they're all, like you said, kind of getting, you know, quite trashed and not respecting. What I don't like, you know, and I'm not even from here, but I also don't love that part of the industry that comes with it, which incorporates using these plastic sort of t-shirt style versions of Lederhosen in Dindl.
That's the next thing. We haven't even talked about this, like having grown up in an area where we have kind of a, you know, like the Tracht vom Oberstdorf.
Yeah. Oh, like just beautiful, the thick, fine leathers. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like handmade, like yeah, pants and shirts and
handed down like by, you know, hundreds of years in some
exactly.
families.
And so it is a special thing, but for Wiesn, like, and it's a weird thing because it, like, Wiesn is over, like 150 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
And like the kind of trend that you have to go there and tracht is not even that old actually, but it somehow led to that. Okay, you have to have a dirndl or a lederhosen when you go there, and so there's like shops, like especially around the Munich Central Station, that sell like these kind of fake dirndl and lederhosen for like 50 bucks or something.
You see it everywhere around the main station. No. Yeah. It's
and
gross.
It's not like, and it's not like a traditional, like yeah, clothing anymore. I mean, like where I come from, like people wear this. Like other people wear suits for special occasions or certain right. dresses or whatever.
Hey, I've seen it there, like at weddings, funerals, like yeah. big important events in someone's life. You wear like your finest leather and
yeah. And at Oktoberfest, it rather turns into a kind of a costume.
It's like a joke. It's yeah. it's like a Halloween thing.
No,
I don't know if they and then like you said, once they have that on, whether or not it's the fine original leathers or if it's this trashy T-shirt style. But as soon as that's on, the behavior, it's like a light switch. You know,
yeah.
and you see, I do absolutely agree with you about the style of or this behavior of men that changes there. And I'm sure I know it right now as I say it that our big listener Moritz is also nodding his head with this because he definitely sees the world through the same lens that we do. But it's this this concept of just letting the most primal, aggressive, macho behavior inside of you let loose because you're uninhibited by this extremely strong alcohol. People forget that it's much mm-hmm. stronger than normal beer. And then you have, you know, uninhibited women, you know, who are a bit maybe easier to manipulate or persuade to do things that they wouldn't do with a sober mind. And you have these men who, you know, end up falling out of the tents in a fist fight, smashing the glass on their heads and stuff and vomiting out of the rides. And it's, I, you know, like I'm not on the level as far as you yet. I might be in a few years, I don't know, but I'm not on the level yet where I wouldn't want to go for at least one day. Like I do enjoy going there at least for one time. It is extremely expensive, so I can't go there too many times, but I would go there one or two times in the whole 2 weeks and, you know, say I'm going to spend this much money. I bring like a limited amount of cash.
No,
you know, if I do have lederhosen from Oberstdorf that was it doesn't fit me very well, but it's legitimate and was handed down to me, so I like to wear that there too.
And I've never seen those actually.
They're from the Geiger family. They don't fit me very well, but they're, you know, surprisingly, because I'm a big dude, they're pretty big on me, so they mm-hmm. when I tuck the shirt into it, there's still like quite a lot of space all around mm-hmm. the waist, but it doesn't matter too much. And I think all I'm really missing is like the nice, like the knee high socks and stuff, but I can borrow those too. But yeah, anyway, so I'll go there and I have that one or two days. I love the rides, you know, I love the food, like the steak semmel, the steak sandwiches they have at these stands is just killer. But even if I go for those one or two days and I go there just to enjoy what I enjoy, like the rides and the food and, you know, 4 or 5 mass or whatever, if I can handle it, it's still like too many people, and with more people comes more problems.
No.
And I think you, in a very eloquent way, kind of voiced the major issues with it that I think a lot of people see but don't think about maybe, but you're totally right. And I would love to actually know a little bit more about the cattle festival thing in your hometown, because I think I've been there for one of them. I don't know if I celebrated it, but someone told me like, hey, today is that day.
Okay.
But
let's
it's
get
really
into it.
Special.
But,
yeah.
But if we close off that Wiesn topic, because I got one thing that came to my mind.
Oh yeah. We can keep going. I just
have you
it.
By chance seen the TV show in Germany? It's called, like, it's a German production and it's called Oktoberfest 1900, but they have it like synced on English now, and will bring it to Netflix if it isn't there already, under the title Oktoberfest Beer and Blood.
I did see something about Oktoberfest 1900, but I didn't. I thought maybe it was like Babylon Berlin, where it's only in German.
You gotta see it, because I know they will. I'm not sure if it is already on Netflix. I'll check that in a second. Or if they'll bring it to Netflix, but also in English.
Let me see.
And it's crazy good. Like, it's pretty dark and kind of evil, and it's about like Oktoberfest in the year 1900, where a lot of things changed for Oktoberfest. And I'm not sure, because I've recommended it to other people I know, and I've got the kind of feedback that for people that don't live in Munich and don't have a certain relation to the city and this event, probably don't enjoy it that much, but still it is a great show. And you live in Munich, and it's like, because it's about these kind of like fights these certain groups had with each other, so like the huge and mighty brewers,
yeah,
against the people working there, etc. And then a guy from, it's basically about a guy from Nuremberg coming in with the idea to build these humongous tents where you could fit like 6,000 people. Because
hold on,
before
sorry,
that,
it's accidentally playing. Sorry, let me.
Okay,
sorry, it's just in my headphones. I tried to look it up, but it just started playing. It is on Netflix. It is on Netflix
okay.
now.
Yeah, Oktoberfest Beer and Blood, and it's about like based on real events. And it's pretty cool, and the title track is by our buddy Luke Cyrus Götze and his band Dreiviertelblut.
They made the theme song for the show.
Yeah.
Well, hey, look at that. But isn't, his name is Gerhard Baumann? The
Whose
main
name?
Guy? That from
the band?
From, yeah. Isn't it Gerhard
sure.
Baumann?
I'm not sure.
He's actually like I don't know him that well. I don't know if I should say like he's a very successful, but I know he's a working composer for television and film.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke does a lot of stuff with him. So that's great that they got this gig. That's awesome.
No. Yeah, great show. Got to see that.
I'm going to write that down, yeah, because I will check that out, because I'm always looking, like, there's a handful of German programs these days that are finally kind of catching up with what actual Western entertainment should be like.
Mm.
And it's actually starting to get interesting enough that, you know, hopefully they put just English subtitles even with it, so I can watch it. Like, for example, I really want to try Babylon Berlin. A lot of friends tell me it's great and that I should try it, but until they offer English subtitles, I can't follow an entire series in German.
No.
And this show, you know, if this has English subtitles, I will definitely check this out.
They do, like, they got it,
they
like
got it
say,
dubbed.
They got it dubbed in English, actually.
That's cool. And, you know, people, like, ever since Dark came out.
Yeah.
I didn't watch Dark yet. I saw one episode. And it didn't quite click, but I'm very open to giving it another try. But ever since that came out post Stranger Things, the writing in Germany, especially in the Munich industry, I mean, I know that just through the people close to me here, but it's the game, the structure's changing a bit, and there are still plenty of limitations from some of the networks here, like BR and ZDF and RTL and ARD, but they're trying to do different things. Like, you know, my friend Johanna wrote on the new Netflix series Biohackers, like on the first season, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain if she wrote on the second one. I'd have to ask. And our good friend Moritz is writing on what seems to be a pretty amazing film project that mm-hmm. is like definitely greenlit and is like pretty astounding. And, you know, Ify being a writing on this show Stichtag for the Join Network, and this new show Wrong for TV Now.
No.
And I feel like with the entertainment in Germany is kind of shifting into stuff that is way more accessible for people who don't just exist over 55 on their sofas, you know, after the news on Bayerischer Rundfunk or something.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things happening and coming from Germany. Like, I mean, Dark, after Stranger Things, had its hype, and people were in that kind of mood, I guess. Mm-hmm. Dark has been for a few months or weeks, I'm not exactly sure about that, but has been the most successful show worldwide on Netflix.
Imagine that, a German show.
Yeah,
you know.
And then a few other things happened. Like, I don't know if you like another German show, How to Sell Drugs Online Fast.
Yeah, dude. That's also like really surprisingly cool for Germans to write that. It doesn't seem like something that was. It kind of seems to me like kind of came out of nowhere. Like, oh, now we're doing things that people really want to watch in different countries.
No, and then stuff like have you seen Unorthodox?
Unorthodox is very good.
No, and it's like the Borough Feldman is American basically, but it's about a lot about Berlin, and I guess a lot of German people working on that show.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, there's some things happening that you probably, I guess at least, and like, you know more about this industry than I do, but I guess things are happening in Germany that you would not have expected like 10 years ago.
No, not at all. I mean, it's definitely like when you, like, you know, you mentioned How to Sell Drugs Online Fast, Dark, and Babylon Berlin. I think these, I could be wrong about a different game changer, but I think from my, you know, American perspective, it seems like these three were like three of the biggest sort of, I'm going to use it again, zeitgeist changers of the entertainment industry here, because there's something about the writing and the limitations that German writing had that I think is opening up a bit more. It's becoming a bit more flexible, which allows greater entertainment. I think probably still today the biggest limitation is how far German basic television will allow the writers to go in terms of edginess. Like a story that gets very... like, for example, let's look at a show like Nick Pazzolato's True Detective, that first season of True Detective, right? It's based on a true crime in Ponchatoula, Louisiana. It's about it incorporates a cult. It incorporates a serial killer. It incorporates rape. It incorporates alcoholism, drug abuse. When you cheat on your wife? What's the word for when you cheat on your spouse? Cheating on your spouse. Like having a mistress, and it's all like, but that's what real people do. Real people abuse drugs and cheat on their wives and rape and murder people. That really happens.
No.
And when you have a story that is allowed to have the, like HBO allows the story to just be exactly how dark and twisted that it needs to be, not just twisted for twisted sake, but twisted because that's the story. And these characters can exist in that realm and push these boundaries of like trying to get somewhere, trying to solve something, trying to solve their own personal problems or to solve the crime itself. And that's why that show is just still like my favorite 8 or 10 episodes of television of all time.
No,
it's just the best season, like single season of television ever, in my opinion. And I think what Germany struggles with, and I know that is slightly changing now, is allowing writers to push those boundaries to tell a greater and more significant story. And, you know, perhaps Dark is, you know, touching that a little bit with, you know, the different, you know, Dark isn't very
Dark
easy to follow.
Dark is also kind of science fictionary, just as.
Yeah. It's kind of sci-fi things. And there's, you know, there are some dark, you know, dark elements to it. No. But I think from what I hear from friends, like I'll finish this thought. Like what I hear from the friends I know who are writers in Munich, in the film industry and television industry here. And what I see from these new shows, like for example, Wrong, which hasn't come out yet. I see a lot of potential, like, well, finally, we're getting to where Germany could be making shows like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. They could be making shows like True Detective. And I think that's amazing because that not only will bring more attention to the industry here and make it more international, but it could also start, you know, expanding the reach in terms of where German writers can go, if they can work in different countries, if they can, I don't know. Maybe I'm just rambling now, but I think it's getting somewhere good now that it definitely wasn't even when I moved here.
No. Yeah, I see that, but what I also think, and like I said before, I'm absolutely no expert and pro in this field, but what I feel like, and I, because I got these thoughts because I think I see kind of a similar phenomenon with podcasts, and that's something I do a lot. Like that, they're, like you said, writers or directors or crews in general are allowed to, like you said, work with these certain edges, and I think that has happened before, but
you don't think it's here to stay.
No, I think it's getting more, and it has always been there, but it hasn't been like that many, like the range of like certain shows or movies within a certain genre and direction. Like there was not always a spot financially, economically, for more than a few of these niche-y kind of things, I guess. And
that makes sense.
In the US industry, because there's so much more money, like a lot of players probably can as well just try and invest into a broader range of different ideas and stories, because if one fails, or two or five fail, it's worst case scenario not that bad for you.
Right, right. Yeah, definitely. And I think, like you're saying, you're bringing podcasts into the conversation. I think, at least in terms of audio and visual content, I can't speak for what's happening in the newspapers or in the magazines or the books. But in terms of audio and visual entertainment, I think you might just be the generation under me, but I think millennial and Gen Z sort of together are, you know, if when millennials become the old people and the internet will have been around that long, and look at where the internet is right now. The internet is so much and so intense that even you quit all social platforms. And that's a lot for someone your age to do. An impressive thing too. But what I'm saying is, I think the internet and the exposure we have to it and the amount of humor and darkness and also, like, you know, it's everything of everything of everything all the time.
No.
And imagine if that stays and gets even more intense as someone like me gets into their 60s, what the generation, your generation and the one after you and after that, what they will bring into these entertainment platforms, especially in countries like Germany, where it has been so famously, I don't want to say just bland, but it has been very limited. You know, like where podcasts are right now.
Yeah.
Like, first off, us being able to have an all English podcast about creative immigrants, you know, is a really cool thing to be able to do.
Let's face it, it's ridiculous. Tell that anybody 7 to 8 years ago.
Exactly. Imagine like a station in Munich, like getting a couple of people like us to do an all English show that you know we get paid to do, essentially. And then I think about like my Ego FM show. You know, they're saying now, like, okay, well, you know, there's some stations like FM Fear in Austria, and they, you know, they have a lot of people who are younger, who are more interested in hearing English. They speak more English, so let's have a program in English and try new things. And now the entertainment industry bringing in new writers, allowing more shows, like the ones we mentioned, to come out, and like getting the bigger networks and the streaming platforms to say, maybe we can try something new. I think that's like, maybe, at least I can only speak for Germany right now, but I think we might be kind of on the cusp of a new, like, all around entertainment revolution, where we could be setting the new boundary of like what's next, because right now there's still the boomers who will still absolutely every night sit at home and enjoy their tatwat. And
say that again.
Tatwat.
Ooh, it's cute how you say that.
Am I fucking it up?
No, not at all. It's just like has a cute little chime to it.
Tatwat. Tatwat.
A little bit like I would expect from Mark, like a little bit not Deutsch. Oat.
Oat. How would you say it?
Tatwat.
Tarot. Yeah, there's always going to be people that want to, you know, have their routine shows. But I think even Moritz is writing Tarot now. Mm. And that's already going to have a fresher, cooler perspective. Because I know what movies and television shows he enjoys. And I've talked to him a lot about this exclusively. And I know that what he and his extremely talented wife, Johanna, are writing, even if it's a tatwat, will be better and more limit-pushing than, for example, what had come before them, I think.
Yeah, I totally see that. And like to that point, I thought you wanted to make sure that like the internet still changes everything.
Yeah.
I rambled about, what kind of probably playing field creative work also needs at times to get to these points where you can like within the entertainment industry diversify so much. Like we see that with music as well, like because the internet and like the whole way like how entertainment may it be a song, a TV show, a movie. Or I don't know, a live footage of a comedian, whatever, is distributed in a completely other way and is consumed in a completely other way. Like, and we see it with music. I think we talked about that on an early episode. Like, especially when you're within a market that is not one of the biggest one. Like, you know where I experienced that? Like being in Germany and obviously. Like listening to a lot of music that comes from the US market, and like pre Spotify, etc. Like I was a reggae and hip hop fan, and the stuff we listened to was like what came over, like the 3 to 5 rap artists, hip hop artists. That are so huge in the States that they also are a thing here, like the 50 Cent and Eminem's, etc. Mm-hmm. Like today, I can listen to, like last week, I listened to this album from an indie rapper from London, who has like maybe 2,000 clicks or something, and mm-hmm. I completely enjoy it. And within, let's say, rock music, there's like so many subgenres, and each one has its own stars and. Like it diversifies so much, and you also see that like you see that on TV and in the cinemas as well, because there are other players in the industry, like, and it's a completely other thing if like a player who doesn't necessarily make his money with the content, let's say Amazon like says, yeah, sure, we have like all the money you need to produce a nice show for our like video streaming platform Amazon Prime Video. Mm-hmm. Like it's a completely different thing, and it's not like, and in Germany that's the thing I know a lot works with all these kinds of funds that pay for a lot of production costs, like Filmförder for Bayern and
the funding programs
the funding programs and so for like classical players it's I guess it's at first a lot of like a lot of organization having conversations, looking for money here, looking for this and that there, etc. Yeah. And it's a lot of organizational work before you, and then you always have to think about, okay, is this idea worth it to go through that process until we get like the money we need, until we get everything to produce it, and will it be a success so that the money comes back?
Right.
And like if Netflix and Amazon are at a point where they say, okay, this year we'll give out the money to produce like I don't know, let's say 50 different TV shows. We want like 3 comedy shows, this and that and that. And we see what works. And if 40 don't work, but 10 work and get millions and millions of views, we're fine. Yeah.
Dude, that, speaking of like the genre, that's also another thing that I think has to develop and change here is that Germany, especially when it comes to film, that films that they produce, they are so caught up on being a super specific genre. Here is the Lebekes junkie. Here's the comedy movie, the comedy, haha, comedy. And then here's the romance movie. Love you, romance only. And then here is the, you know, the crime. But they never say, let's have a dark comedic crime story with a romance plot line. You know, it's never like, that's something about American films and English films and Irish films. And a lot of films, actually. Spanish, like Almodovar does that perfectly. But there's so many other countries that make films where they, it isn't necessarily like just a comedy, just a thriller, just a this, just a that. But they have, you know, like Cabin in the Woods is an example of like, it's horror, but it's really funny, but it's also sci-fi. And it even has some thriller aspects. And I think it's really cool when you see all these different things coming together and working so well. But in Germany, you see like comedy only. Tell me it's funny. And then like, you know, for example, Ify wrote a film and I hope really one day that it comes to fruition. And I think it will. A lot of people keep coming back to her about it, but nothing's happened yet. But it's a film sort of really roughly based on like our true experiences being an international couple and coming together and our families being so different and stuff. And it's really, it's executed wonderfully. And I was there, you know, she's ran everything of it by me as she was doing it. And I think it's really special and unique. And I think it shows a perspective on an international couple that maybe people don't get so much in other platforms. And it's not just a straight up comedy, because there is a lot of struggle that comes with being an international couple. So there's a lot of, there's like, you know, there's some heartbreak, there's some drama, there is a lot of comedy in it, but it's kind of this Noah Baumbach, like darkness, but with good characters and an interesting world, and there's romance to it, and there's some fun in it, and it's just, you know, it's like, or Wes Anderson, it's just hard to label it as just a pure comedy, and that's what I think is going to be hard, unless that industry shifts. For a film like that, that is very good to be made in Germany, unless it would be shipped out to a different country, I think to make it here would be, it's hard. It's hard. I had one thought too, just before I forget, because you mentioned the music industry. I have this feeling, and I could be totally wrong. It's just this instinct I have that the music industry, the way that it is just right now, is kind of on a slight verge of another collapse. And I don't mean it in the sense that that it would lose more money, because there was such an enormous collapse after the physical products went downhill, like CDs and tapes and stuff. I mean, and that's not including vinyl, because that's still popular, but I get this feeling, and maybe it's just me, but I get this feeling that there is so much popular music that once again, by far isn't the first time, but once again, sounds so similar that we might be facing another moment in the next 3 to 5 years where the shift into what people want to hear greatly varies from what we're listening to now. Because if you think about 2005, 2007, like the most... there was like basically two departments you could be in. There was the Crank That Soulja Boy sort of popular. That was like the number one song on all the radio stations. You had that world, or on the other side, you had Fleet Foxes, Vampire Weekend, MGMT. Like this extremely popular indie pop, indie rock music.
Yeah, that, but you know, like not here. Like
not in Germany.
Like I guess like most people probably to this day still don't know Fleet Foxes.
Then maybe I'm just speaking for America then. It's hard to say because, you know, I only see things through my algorithms. So maybe my algorithm's just stale right now, but I get the feeling like, I was noticing something on Spotify the other day. I noticed like, okay, everyone's been anticipating so much the new Certified Lover Boy album from Drake and Donda from Kanye.
No.
And I gave both of them a reasonable skim through. I wasn't really excited for either, but I wanted to just be a part of what people are talking about. So I listened to a little bit of both and just nothing grabbed me at all. And even the new Kendrick singles are pretty boring, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the only person in that world who I think is always doing something interesting is Anderson .Paak, but he even has a new single for this Marvel film that's beautiful. It's, of course, it's, he is so painfully talented, but it's also not something brand new for him.
No.
So all of that kind of fits into what you expect. And then you have, like, I was looking through, like, suggestions for me on Spotify, and it was, like, popular, like, indie rock. And I thought, indie rock, okay, that's all I really, I mean, they know that that's what I listen to a lot. And I expected Tame Impala. I expected, I don't know, like, Father John Misty or whatever. What I think of as, like, indie. And the person on the cover to promote the indie playlist was Olivia Rodrigo.
What?
Who is so not indie. Like, what? I mean, I know Tame Impala is enormously famous, but they're still kind of indie in my mind.
Like, they come from that world, kind of.
They come, dude, they broke through the mold of indie and created something altogether. They really did something different. But Olivia Rodrigo, like, she had, I mean, as far as I know, she has one hit pop single.
No.
And she was on like Jimmy Fallon, and she, you know, people sing her lyrics in these gimmicks online and stuff. And it's a TikTok track. And I thought like, oh, you know, that's good for her. good for her. But why don't they put her in
there
the same?
There was a nice one.
You know, good for her. But why don't they put her in the same world as Billie Eilish? Like Billie Eilish is pop, and she doesn't try to sell you anything else. She just is. I think Billie Eilish is like super genuine. I think I don't love all her music, but I think what she does is what she does, and they don't sell it as anything else. It is pop. She's a very mainstream artist. There you go. And Olivia Rodrigo is super mainstream too. She just plays a different style. And they're like, newest indie tracks from the underground. Good for you. Happy, happy, happy.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's like, what?
And still there, you could say like the big difference between those two is that Billie Eilish also, you could say, comes from this kind of indie world. By the way, I actually, I don't know, late to the party, but like 2 weeks ago, for the first time, I really like gave the whole album, like actually the current Billie Eilish album, a listen through, and I really like it. It has taken me like 2.5 years.
Wait, the one that she just came out with, but she's blonde.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Happier than ever. And
That's it.
Like for that whole first wave of Billie Eilish hype, I really was not a part of, probably because I was so annoyed, because what's pretty cool about the station we do this podcast for, M94.5, is that they really often like find musicians and artists and probably hits before, at least in Germany, anyone else plays it. So, and
yeah,
we had Billie Eilish, bad guy, playing for like 4 weeks on heavy rotation for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And then that stopped. And I was so annoyed by it because I was sitting there in the office and all day you hear that. And then like that hype was over. And then it broke through like, it was pre-TikTok, Instagram, and all these bigger stations, etc. But that's another thing. Like, I really am into the Billie Eilish hype now. And I must say, I also didn't like the new Kanye album. But it led there that I listened through Life of Pablo again. And I really loved that album.
That's one thing about stuff that Kanye puts out now. It really reminds you of how great he was.
Yeah.
Like Donda for me is very boring.
No.
And so but, is, I mean, I don't even really like Drake either. I didn't even really, nothing sticks to mind about that album.
But to your general point, like I don't experience that much, but that is probably, or at least part of it probably is because I don't use Spotify and...
Oh yeah, right. You're an Apple Music guy. But don't you feel sometimes that the algorithm, you think the algorithm for that gives you something that you really love that you hadn't tried before?
Like the way I use it, because the algorithms aren't that good as on Spotify, and the way I use it, like I don't really use the algorithm at all. Like, I have in mind that probably, or I see that, okay, they probably got on my, like it's called, like that starting page, like, there's an album upcoming because you got that one album from that artist download. But that's the way it, like, that's the maximum. I don't, I'm not into playlists that Apple Music gives me or anything. That's probably only as well as, like, the way I use it. And so, I don't
experience... It'll say, like, you listen to Billie Eilish's Better Than Ever, so you might like...
That doesn't really happen. Like, I only get notifications when artists that I follow bring out new music. That's the thing. That's the maximum.
They never suggest you anything you haven't heard before.
Not really. Like, yes, if I want, within a certain point of the menu bar, in a certain section, then you can have that. And they have these. What I actually like better is that they have this kind of... like it's called Apple Music Radio, and it's like radio shows with artists, and they talk about their music, etc. It's like a podcast with music. There's cool things happening, but that's the only thing. Like I consume music in that kind of way. The rest of the time, like I don't know, I go through my, probably because I went from like having an iTunes library, getting that migrated to Apple Music. Like I still listen to the to music in a way like, okay, I go through my library and start listening through it at some point and over again. And from time to time, like finding new stuff because somebody told me, oh, have you listened to that and that record or whatever, or I don't know. You can't get around like a Kanye release or anything. You like in our bubble, you know when there's something new out. But to your point, like that there's a certain shift or a kind of collapse. Like, so I can't relate to that too much within music. I see it, but I also, like, I see your point totally. But on the other hand, I also feel like that what you describe will happen, I think has happened with a lot of genres.
Yeah.
Like in the market I know here in Germany, especially, where certain genres diversify and it goes more into niches and because people don't want to listen to the same stuff over and over again. But I see that point, but I can relate to it from like my job and the field I work in, that there is like that there we are at the collapsing point of how you could you say the way people like or consume a form of entertainment and news, etc. Because I see that a lot, like in Germany, like RTL is starting to invest in journalists and trying to put more focus on their news program, etc. Like ProSiebenSat.1 is making huge efforts, like building up a whole team and having new shows, which is like they realize, okay, the people don't just want to see like kind of reality trash TV on our stations anymore. We have to do something else. And then I see huge radio stations like Antenne Bayern promoting with phrases like less raffles on the program, more music and stuff like that. And you see like, okay, there's a shift in like people are sick of some things that have been normal in the way we consume any form of media, entertainment, news, whatever.
Yeah.
And there are things changing, and some of these forms of presentation that we were used to for years and years are probably collapsing, like you said.
There's something changing there. I don't know. I haven't talked to many people about it, but there is this sort of just. There's something stale about what I'm seeing, and I don't know if anyone else feels that way, but that's the vibe that I get.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, for those who have, speaking of music, for those who have listened to the new song that I just dropped with Tom Yanks, "Waiting for Love," thank you very much. It got onto the, very lucky, very thankful, got back-to-back singles on the Spotify editorial playlist Indie Brand Noi. And that's a big deal for me. That's really an honor that they put two singles of mine on there. So that's very cool. Pieces with Moonmates and Waiting for Love with Tom Yanks.
What kind of weird but nice looking cover. I must admit,
you haven't heard it yet.
I haven't heard it yet. But that totally fits my point that I don't like that the algorithm of Apple Music isn't that good. Because in that case, it hasn't reminded me that I should listen to the new Jordan Prince single.
I think some things are kind of behind with it. Like, I still can't get it to come up. You know, when you post an Instagram story and you can select a song to play, I still can't get it to come up, which is really weird. Pieces comes up, but not Waiting for Love. So I find that weird. But it is on TikTok. I can use it on a TikTok video, but weird. Waiting for Love. I don't know. There's a few people who haven't written me about it. So I assume they haven't had the time yet. Or they're afraid to tell me they don't like it. But it is a different kind of song from what I do. Like, perhaps I should have... Part of me thinks maybe I should have had a pseudonym to release this kind of music under.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted to release it under my platform because of the amount of... there's a certain amount of streams I will get anyway.
The reach.
The reach. That's it. So I didn't want to start like a whole new... channel and pay. I don't have the time to make like a new persona
I mean, but like you said, probably releasing it under another name or pseudonym or something. But I guess it's still something that you, as Jordan Prince, like, are not ashamed of that you have
not at all.
And
I
released
love this
that song. Like, I mean, and then I think it could also be cool, like to show people, like, okay, you know me as the happy wedding guitar player, but I also do this kind of stuff.
Totally, man. Like, I would love to have the chance one day to play that song live, like either with a band or with Tom Yanks on the DJ kit or something. But
Waiting for Live.
Waiting for Live. Yeah. I'm going to do some more songs with him, and he actually... He did our remix of our theme song, for those who don't know.
Yes.
That's the same guy. He remixed a song from my previous album, 12 Songs for 12 Friends, which I do also plan to release this year, which I'm pretty excited about. It brings a totally different vibe to the song that I didn't imagine at all. So I'll leave that as a surprise for now. But for whoever hasn't checked it out yet, Waiting for Love is out. And it's just this... it just makes me feel good. It's just like sexy and fun, and it's really silly and carefree, and it's just about like vibing out. It got on a handful of more like smaller chill vibe playlists. So that's always a good feeling, because I never had music on these chill vibe playlists. That's always more like lo-fi hip hop stuff. So this new song fits perfectly into that world.
And I mean, probably that's a cool vibe. I mean, we just passed the 1 hour mark. Probably should we put in a little clip of that song here and come back after it?
Yeah, let's check it out. Yeah, dude, that's the vibe, man. So I'm curious, you know, to hear more about what you guys think about it. And I do think, just before I forget, because we did say that we would talk about this, let's talk a little bit about those election results.
Ooh, yes, sir. before we forget it. Like, I'm real.
Morris is mentally rubbing his hands together, like, oh, no, yeah. No.
Not at all. But I would be really interested in, like, how did you spend, like, the election Sunday? Or did you watch TV? Did you read something about it? How did you like, watch this election or have a...
Yeah, we didn't get to see... I mean, I don't know if everything ended on Sunday officially, but we did have, thankfully, more of a calm Sunday. I gave my mom the night off. And,
sounds like she
I gave
regularly.
Her the night off.
Like, she's the one writing Jordan Prince hits like in a little back room, and it, because it was the election, like, you were so nice to give her a night off.
That was just coincidental. She was tired, so we said, yeah, take the night off. And we had, thankfully, a calm evening in general. So we just, YouTube offers a lot of live streams from certain networks. And we watched, because you mentioned it, Deutsche Welle. Oh. And Deutsche Welle has live news on YouTube, just like ABC mm-hmm. News or other news is. And we were watching it, I'd say, for about 2 hours, maybe. Just at some point, we just turn it off because it's just correspondents talking about mm-hmm. predictions, and they can only say so much, you know. But what was interesting for me was to see these charts and graphs of the potential coalition groups being explained in English, because when you see the colors and the numbers, you're like, oh, okay, this makes a bit more sense. After, like, when you explained it, it was kind of hard for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah, I believe that.
But then having your explanation in my head already and then seeing the charts mm-hmm. on the page, I was like, oh, that's what he meant. And I think it's really cool. First off, it's astounding and pretty sad that IFD has over 11%, even though it went down 8% or something like that. But 11% is a lot. And then what's also interesting is the coalitions, none of the parties that are involved in potential coalitions even consider doing one with IFD, so they're not even listed on the charts.
Yeah.
So no party is even remotely saying, like, no, absolutely not. And I think that's cool that they all have different philosophies, more left, more centrist, more right, but they're like, no, we're not going to do a coalition with those guys.
Yes. that's a good thing. To get it right, like, they got 10.3% now, IFD, and it was like, yeah, over 12 the last time. And the last time, what was kind of, yeah, because this is not a democratic people, these are extreme right, this is an extremely right wing party that is
extremely right.
Yes. I'm happy because that's one of the the conclusions I got out of this. Like, I'm still happy to live in a country that or where, like, these bigger parties, none of them, neither the more the rather, like, economy liberal one or the more conservative one, more progressive ones, none of these, like, even thinks about working together with this party. Or, like, we've also seen in other European countries, like, where bigger, often conservative parties try to use these ultra right wing parties to get their
get their agenda pushed through, kind of.
And their majorities, etc. So that's a good thing. And the rest of this election was pretty weird and pretty new for Germany.
So how did you feel about it? How did you watch it?
Like, first of all, I gotta say, I was not that satisfied. And the United...
Because they were so even?
And the US election is kind of the reason. Like, it's your fault. It's your fault that I was a little bit unsatisfied because of the sheer difference that I knew before. But I don't know. I probably expected too much in that terms. Like, the event...
What do you mean?
The event that took place around, like, the US elections. And I was watching days and days of CNN. And the way...
Oh, just like the presentation, like,
what,
of it all.
What huge TV networks make out of it. It's kind of like, because it's mm-hmm. almost like watching sports, live sports. Like having totally. All these it's experts like and graphics match. And here and there on tactics and whatsoever. And he's a key race alert and so on and so forth. We get news from Florida.
It's a show. Like, it's a real show.
All the time. Like they make a huge show out of it. And like you could imagine, that's not the case in Germany. Like in Germany, it's like you turn on the TV around 6 p.m. And probably around 10 or 11, you more or less know what has happened and that's it. And it is probably also weird because we're clearly finally at that point where you don't have, like we have more pluralism and not these, like in the US you have the nickname like Grand Old Party for the Republicans, or you have none of these huge parties anymore in Germany. Like there's no party.
What's the nickname?
Grand Old Party for the Republicans. Like you don't have these grand parties in Germany anymore. There's no party like getting more than around 25%, like one quarter of voters.
Oh, so it's not like ain't no party like a grand no party because a grand no party don't stop. It's not like that, right?
Not like that, no. But like there's no party like gaining a majority of votes. Like it's four parties that are in a range between 13% and 25% that somehow have to get together. And we are in a weird situation right now after the election that it seems like for all people who are not informed, like the SPD, the Social Democratic Party, got the most, or my screen is, we got the most votes, like they got 25.7%. After them, you have the CDU, the more conservative party, like with 24.1. Then the Greens with 14.8. And the FDP, which you could probably, are a little bit similar to the, like the libertarians in the USA.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so,
that's what I
figured in first place, you got SPD, second CDU, and then Greens and FDP. And it seems like now that the third and fourth placed party, like if you just look at the numbers, who got the most votes. Like the third and fourth place are the ones kind of deciding who they will form a coalition with and who will be chancellor.
There's two things that were really a big deal, right? Like one was that it's the first time that Greens will be, they will have chair in the government. Is that right?
No, they've been in government, in that short period. Pre-Merkel.
Oh, okay. But don't they? There's something about them, right? That they have more seats or something.
It's their best. It's their best result in the federal elections. Oh,
okay.
Ever.
That's
not what they expected. They expected even more. That's why they nominated a chancellor candidate. Mm-hmm. Because they thought they had chances to like be the strongest party, but still, it is actually their best result they ever
that's
had.
That's amazing. And the other thing is that the opposing nominated chancellor against Olaf Scholz.
Scholz is the one for SPD.
The one opposing him who laughed at, has the picture of him laughing at the flooding.
Armin Laschet.
What's his name? Armin Laschet. He's like not stepping down from his current position, right? He's like, there's something about it. Isn't he like opposing the situation? He knows he lost, but he's not offering to step down from potential chancellor seat. There's something like that, right?
Yeah, that was the thing, and it's pretty interesting what will happen within that party right now, because like on election night he said like that because they are not so far behind SPD that they still kind of he could say in quote unquote deserve to form a government and him being the new chancellor.
Okay.
And now that changes a little because a lot of other party members of CDU have said no, like we are not in the position, like the people have not given us a clear votum to do this. Like, we're not the winners of this. Like, it's the, like, the Greens had their best result ever. The CDU has their worst result ever with 24%.
Oh, so this is the lowest they've ever been before.
That's the lowest they've ever been. And there's not a, because we talked so much about the districts and also the constituencies in Germany.
Yeah.
Like, in not a single one, the CDU has performed better than at the last election, 2017.
Why do you think it was the lowest year for them?
there's probably a lot of reason, but they have been the reigning party for 16 years now again, and yeah,
it's time for a change, I guess, right?
It's time for a change, and like we could go on here for a long part about where they actually did not a good job, and conservatism gets to its limits, I guess, in terms of sometimes you have to give new ideas a chance, and they were way too slow with things like, and you know that, like digitalization,
mm-hmm.
like coming into the digital age, in Germany, offices are still like faxing around paper
insane,
to communicate, dude. And stuff like that. The internet is super shitty, and that's only one. Not having talked about probably what they have done for schools and universities, which is not that much, or like the health sector or the climate crisis.
So the list really goes on and on here.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of cases of corruption within the party and within, probably within some smaller regional governments of CDU-reigned federal states, and so on and so on. So there are a lot of reasons, but in general, there has a lot of shit been going on actually with members of this party. That also really annoyed me personally, I must say. But in general, you could, I guess, also say, okay, it's like it's been 16 years and there are certain big topics and issues that we see in Germany. And many people, no matter if they probably have voted for CDU before or like them or not, probably see that, okay, like the government, and the government has been CDU for the past 16 years, hasn't done enough with this and that and so on and so forth.
Okay. So yeah, it's just sort of a general feeling that it's time to try different things.
Yeah, and so like they still have won a lot of constituencies, like of these districts. Like in Bavaria, it has been a surprise and a kind of sensation that there's one district, one in all of Bavaria, that has not been won this time by the CSU, but the Greens, which is Munich South.
Oh wow! Okay, that's
but,
cool.
Like, I can send you the link to a map later. Like, it's the only district in all of Bavaria. All other have been won by CSU, so they still have a strong base. It's not like that, but there's not a single district where they have gained votes. Like, it's not have come. They lost basically everywhere. Still, they got majorities in districts, but they basically have, in compared to the last election, they have lost everywhere, and it's their lowest ever.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So it was a pretty intense election then.
Yeah, and that leads to, because like the SPD, the Social Democratic Party, they have won a lot regarding the CDU has lost like around 9% compared to the last election, and that was already a low result for them. And the SPD has won 5%, what has been pretty low before. And they also have also been in government with CDU for the past 8 years. And so they probably have kind of the same problem. Just because I want to explain why, or probably a reason why, while one party goes down, the other one doesn't go up and replaces them.
It doesn't mean necessarily that it's just between those two. Because,
because SPD also had problems, and like many voters from CDU went to different other parties, like especially in Eastern Germany. Sadly, they have lost a lot to alt-right wing AfD.
Right.
They have also lost a lot to the Greens and to FDP, like the liberals. So
It's funny that people leave that more centrist group to go to one of two extremes. Like Greens are way more extreme in one direction than AfD is more extreme in another direction.
You cannot say that. Like the Greens are...
No.
Like the Greens has been a party of, like, you could say hippies that came into parliament in the 80s and 90s probably. But they're an established party now and they are not extremely left or anything.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But you see that with like I still don't want to compare these because there's a huge difference. But that's something you see and that many people are happy with at least. That it's not like that because it's not like many people have left these more traditional parties like SPD and CDU for the in extreme directions, left or right.
Okay.
Because those both have lost. Like the AfD has lost compared to the last election, and especially like the left party, Die Linke.
Right.
Still, I want to say that clearly, you can't compare Linke and AfD. But if you want to say like rather the borders of the spectrum, like to the left and the right, they have both lost, but in the middle, in between, it's not two parties anymore that win or lose votes from each other.
Yeah.
But it has rather become like four parties in a certain range, and it has diversified into like four parties. And that obviously leads to them stealing each other's votes, which leads to, okay, you don't have one or two parties that gain over, or like one party gaining over 40% or something, and then having a coalition with a party that probably, I don't know, gained 8%, and you have a government. But you need, like we said before, like you need three parties now. And that leads to the weird situation that number three and four, like the third and fourth place, the Greens and the yellow ones, like FDP, are the ones having their, like today, while we're recording this, they are having the first talks, are talking, because they also say we are the parties that have the biggest differences between each other's programs and ideas.
Yeah.
And they are talking now, and after that, they will talk to like the parties who still got the most votes still being CDU and SPD, and kind of decide, okay, will we as the Greens and the FDP form a coalition with the SPD, and that will make Olaf Scholz the chancellor?
Oh.
Or will we, because you think obviously the party that gains the most votes decides how the new government looks. But it's not exactly that way, because if the Greens say, okay, we don't want to, I don't think that will happen, but example given, like the Greens would say we don't want to work with Olaf Scholz as a chancellor, then he would have no chance to become the new chancellor and form a new government, because he needs the Greens to do that. And so like the smaller parties that gained, like the FDP gained 11.5% and the Greens like 14.8%, are more or less deciding, okay, which bigger partner will be reigning this country with us.
Right. Okay, so the two smaller parties, they will make a coalition with one of the two major parties, depending on which major party they make these compromises and coalitions with. That will decide eventually in some week's time who the new chancellor will be.
Hopefully in some week times, it can also take, it also could take a month like the last time.
So what happens to the government in Germany as it stands before these decisions are finalized? So nothing changes from Merkel's reign until those changes are stamped and signed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Like she's still in office, the current government is still working, which is a kind of like some journalists have make jokes about it and kind of bet with each other, because the thing is, the question is, and I'm not sure if it's that important, but will Chancellor Merkel be like the historically who had the longest who has longest been in office?
Yeah, the longest reign,
exactly. Because before her, like in the 80s and 90s, like the chancellor what was Western Germany before, and then all of Germany, Helmut Kohl, has also been in office for 16 years. And it's a matter of days, weeks and days now, whether she will basically be longer in office than him or not.
She'll have a longer record by just a short margin.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy, man.
But But yeah, so so she is still in office and still has some international meetings, etc. Like it's been the United Nations meeting last week. I'm not sure about that, but yeah, she will still be in office. But I just find the situation is still weird and new, and I'm not sure whether I like it that much or not. I think I still like the system in Germany, and I like to see, like I said before, that I like this kind of pluralism, and there are certain perspectives and parties standing for these perspectives.
Yeah.
And I like that it's like it's not like in other countries that like the conservatives losing more and more and more and more votes to the ultra right, or being transformed themselves to a rather far right party, like you could see with the Green Party, the Republicans in the USA. Like it's horrible, yeah, what has happened to this party and is still happening, and what kind of forces are more or less ruling there. And so I'm happy to not have these kind of things happening. But still, it's a weird situation, because you would imagine like the leader of the party with the most votes to decide what is the next government. And it has happened before that like there has been a coalition formed which did not include the party who basically, if you want so, in quotation marks, won the election. But that you have one party with 11.5% and one with 14.8% of votes, like more or less decide who's going to be the next chancellor for another party.
It's kind of weird funny. Thing, it's a very funny business you guys are pulling here. That's a really funny way to do things. But
no,
I'll just ask this final question on it. Like, what do you think is the benefit of the government election process working like the way it is now? Is there a benefit, or is it just an old way that should definitely change?
Like you mean the process of building the government now, well, like, you know, like post-election,
like the how wild it sounds that the party with the most electoral votes doesn't have the power to choose their chancellor. Like there isn't a chancellor representing that party that just is in power, but instead two smaller parties have to make a coalition with one of the two major parties, and then that like is there a benefit to that, or you think it's an outdated system?
I think there's a benefit to that, of course, because it comes from the basic idea, okay, we want to have more parties. We want to have this pluralism, like this system where you not only can choose between A or B, like it basically is with presidential elections in the United States. So, and I really like that, because often there are more perspectives and nuances, etc., that one party can represent, or two parties. And the fact is, you need a government needs the majority in parliament to make decisions. Like there also are examples of federal states or that are ruined by a minority like government, but still basically you need a majority to have that. And I also think I don't know if it will work good or not. I still don't know what to think actually about this situation that we're in, and I don't know what will come, but I think it can be a benefit that it's not only one party like reigning over this huge, like Germany's not a huge country in terms of space, but it's like the most important economy in Europe, etc., etc. And I think it is a benefit that you not only have the perspectives and ideas of one party, but of probably two or three parties within a government. But what I really think should be changed, or where there should be certain rules, is that I really, and especially many Germans, I guess, feel that way after the last election, or after the 2017 election, that basically these parties can take as long as they want to form a new government.
They don't have a deadline, like by November 1st, you must have decided.
I don't want to put any date on that, because I have absolutely no idea what would be legitimate or anything. I don't know, but
yeah.
But still, I think that's probably a learning from this election. Like as we know now, okay, it will not happen anymore. That it is so easy to form a new government, because it's not like okay, we can anticipate that. And predictions were pretty good this time, like before this election.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it is not like, okay, predictions say us CDU will win like over 40%, so they only need one partner, and most of the time them and the FDP are pretty close to each other, and FDP surely will get like around 10%. So done deal, that's going to be the new government. We know that this is not the situation anymore, and probably will not be so soon again that you have these strong parties. And so I think it's the parties' job for the next elections, like to anticipate more what could it mean if we potentially had to work together with this or that party, to be better prepared before the next process of building a government. And as far as I've heard, that has already been the case. Like I've heard one chairwoman of the Greens today saying on TV that like over the past period, like Greens and FDP have talked a lot because they've learned from their mistakes the last time. Because the thing is, do you know about this the scenario that happened the last time in 2017?
I don't think so.
Okay, people have thought for a long time that it would, that there would come a so-called Jamaica coalition. Jamaica because of the colors, because of CDU black, FDP yellow, and green.
Jamaica.
Like the flag, yeah. That's why Jamaica coalition.
Oh, I got you.
And everybody thought that would come in weeks and months. They were discussing and trying to find compromises. And then at one point, suddenly, like the head of the FDP said, no, we're out of this. And nobody wanted a große Koalition, like CDU and SPD again. And it happened in the end. And we got to avoid stuff like this, because that's the point I wanted to make. Sorry, I'm talking so much.
No, it's all good.
And we had talked about that last week in our in our episode.
Yeah.
Like there are big and humongous issues and problems where now is the time to take steps to prepare for. And so we surely, like, the reality doesn't give us the time to have these kind of debates for weeks and months and so on.
Yeah.
So, and I think, I hope that parties know that and are ready for it, and know that it's super important to get a functional new government in place pretty soon. Because one thing I had a nightmare. I don't know why I dream these kind of things, but that there would be a new corona wave, like, coming.
Well, that's a realistic dream.
Yeah, like an evil one that really, like, imagine like last winter, like the worst month of the pandemic.
Oh yeah.
That something like this would come again, and I dreamt, it was just a dream of mine, and after the election now, like, it's coming this autumn, and the parties don't wanna be in charge for that, so that they just wait until they form a new government after that corona wave. It was just a dream of mine, and I hope this does not happen. But just to, and then it came to my mind again. Yeah, like, there are so important problems and issues: climate change, COVID, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
that need action to be taken now. And so, that's something I think we should think about, probably, if it doesn't work out this time, to probably have new rules for that you can't take forever to form a new government and play games there, etc.
Beautifully said, man. I think that's a good spot to wrap it up.
No.
Nice, dude. Thanks for all the info.
If you're
as
interested,
always.
Because I really enjoyed this from time to time, also talking about German politics. We can do this more often, because it's interesting times, and often
it is.
It's
of the moment. I think it's good if we do bring it in, you know, more often, because this is, it's good to, it's, I know I'm learning something. I'm sure a lot of listeners are learning, because you seem really informed about it. So that's really, I think it's important, and it's good times, and things are changing here. So it's probably good to stay up to date. People who, you know, people who live here who aren't as well versed in it as you are, it's good to learn from it.
Nice, dude. Yeah, I enjoyed.
Cool, man. Great episode, man. This was really fun. We covered a lot of cool stuff. I'm excited to write the description for this. Nice, buddy. All right, guys. Thank you so very much for listening. Please go ahead and follow Artsy Fartsy Immigrants on Instagram. And we have a YouTube channel up. We're going to try and get back into the video studio sooner than later. And otherwise, we love you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.